The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Good morning, Glory America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway on Thursday, August the 26th. The Afghanistan crisis is reaching a crescendo. A lethal terrorist attack is expected to target the Kabul airport within hours, according to the defense minister in Great Britain. Both the U.S. and the United Kingdom have warned their citizens to avoid the Kabul airport as a result. This is unfortunate because in this disaster of a situation, thousands of Americans are still trying to get there. American citizens, American green card holders. And the Wall Street Journal headlines, U.S. is still searching for Americans in Afghanistan as the deadline closes in. The New York Times says 1,500 Americans remain in Afghanistan. That does not count green card holders. It does not include the 250,000 Afghanis who are eligible to come to the United States on an SIV, according to the New York Times. The CIA and the U.S. troops are conducting brave, heroic missions outside of the Kabul airport to extract Americans when they can find them, but they are limited in range and scope that they can go to. And the Taliban is busy showing off U.S.-made weapons and gear in an effort to intimidate and project authority around the country. Let's begin with what Secretary Blinken told us and didn't tell us about how many Americans are behind. Cut number one from Secretary Blinken's presser yesterday.
We're taking every precaution, but this is very high risk. As the president said yesterday, we're on track to complete our mission by August 31st, provided the Taliban continue to cooperate and there are no disruptions to this effort.
Continued cut number two.
Now, many of you have asked how many U.S. citizens remain in Afghanistan who want to leave the country. Based on our analysis, starting on August 14, when our evacuation operations began, there was then a population of as many as 6,000 American citizens in Afghanistan who wanted to leave. Over the last 10 days, roughly 4,500 of these Americans have been safely evacuated, along with immediate family members. Over the past 24 hours, we've been in direct contact with approximately 500 additional Americans and provided specific instructions on how to get to the airport safely. We'll update you regularly on our progress in getting these 500 American citizens out of Afghanistan. For the remaining roughly 1,000 contacts that we had who may be Americans seeking to leave Afghanistan, we're aggressively reaching out to them multiple times a day through multiple channels of communication, phone, email, text messaging, to determine whether they still want to leave and to get the most up-to-date information and instructions to them for how to do so. Some may no longer be in the country. Some may have claimed to be Americans, but turn out not to be. Some may choose to stay. We'll continue to try to identify the status and plans of these people in the coming days. Thus, from this list of approximately 1,000, we believe the number of Americans actively seeking assistance to leave Afghanistan is lower, likely significantly lower. Having said that, these are dynamic calculations that we are working hour by hour to refine for accuracy. And let me, if I can, just take a moment to explain why the numbers are difficult to pin down with absolute precision at any given moment.
You know, it is, I understand it is difficult, but it's all based on an analysis that did not explain at the beginning why the original estimates were between 10 and 15,000. It does not appear to address green card holders who are entitled to be in the United States. He continued to say more. Cut number three.
While evacuating Americans is our top priority, we're also committed to getting out as many Afghans at risk as we can before the 31st. That starts with our locally employed staff, the folks who've been working side by side in our embassy with our diplomatic team. And it includes special immigrant visa program participants and also other Afghans at risk. It's hard to overstate the complexity and the danger of this effort. We're operating in a hostile environment in a city and country now controlled by the Taliban, with the very real possibility of an ISIS-K attack. We're taking every precaution, but this is very high risk. As the president said yesterday, we're on track to complete our mission by August 31st, provided the Taliban continue to cooperate and there are no disruptions to this effort. The president has also asked for contingency plans in case he determines that we must remain in the country past that date. But let me be crystal clear about this. There is no deadline on our work to help any remaining American citizens who decide they want to leave to do so, along with the many Afghans who have stood by us over these many years and want to leave and have been unable to do so. That effort will continue every day past August 31st. The Taliban have made public and private commitments to provide and permit safe passage for Americans, for third country nationals, and Afghans at risk going forward past August 31st. The United States, our allies and partners, and more than half of the world's countries, 114 in all, issued a statement making it clear to the Taliban that they have a responsibility to hold to that commitment and provide safe passage for anyone who wishes to leave the country, not just for the duration of our evacuation and relocation mission, but for every day thereafter. And we're developing detailed plans for how we can continue to provide consular support and facilitate departures for those who wish to leave after August 31st. Our expectation, the expectation of the international community, is that people who want to leave Afghanistan after the U.S. military departs should be able to do so. Together, we will do everything we can to see that that expectation is met.
The estimate now being listed as breaking news at CNN is that 150, only 150 Americans remain to be evacuated overnight. Apparently, great progress was made in finding and rescuing Americans. We have to pray that that continues. The terrorist threat, of course, is out there. That should be enough time. But CNN is also reporting that there's only 36 hours left to use Kabul airport to get out. This is the final segment from Secretary of State Blinken's message yesterday, cut four.
And let me, if I can, just take a moment to explain why the numbers are difficult to pin down with absolute precision at any given moment. And let me start with Americans who are in Afghanistan and we believe want to leave. First, as I think all of you know, the U.S. government does not track Americans' movements when they travel around the world. When Americans visit a foreign country or if they reside there, we encourage them to enroll with the U.S. Embassy. Whether they do or not is up to them. It's voluntary. And then when Americans leave a foreign country, it's also up to them to de-enroll. Again, that's a choice, not a requirement. Particularly given the security situation in Afghanistan, for many years, we have urged Americans not to travel there. We've repeatedly asked Americans who are in Afghanistan to enroll. And since March of this year, we've sent 19 separate messages to Americans enrolled with the embassy in Kabul, encouraging and then urging them to leave the country. We've amplified those direct messages on the State Department website and on social media. We even made clear that we would help pay for their repatriation. And we provided multiple communication channels for Americans to contact us if they're in Afghanistan and want help in leaving. The specific estimated number of Americans in Afghanistan who want to leave can go up as people respond to our outreach for the first time. And it can go down when we reach Americans we thought were in Afghanistan who tell us they've already left. There could be other Americans in Afghanistan who never enrolled with the embassy, who ignored public...
Secretary Blinken goes on to explain that we just don't know. Andrea Mitchell followed it on NBC and said this, cut number five.
But the Taliban right now, focusing on the mission right now, are not living up to their commitments. People are being stopped to trying to get into the airport. I'm talking about, you know, women, SIVs, others, Afghans, people with papers. And they're being stopped outside the airport now. There are total bottlenecks, which seem to rise to the level of what the president said were the contingencies if the Taliban is not complying, if the flow can't continue. We're loading planes, but some planes are leaving without, and some people are people who have private planes waiting for them with landing rights, but can't get into the airport, as well as beyond the SIVs, there are lawyers, there are judges, women lawyers, judges, educators. We've told them for 20 years, you can live up to your potential. And now they feel abandoned. And I'd finally like to ask you about the local hires. We evacuated our embassy, and there have been cables back that I know you must be familiar with, or your teams are, of people who feel completely betrayed. And these are thousands of people that we rely on in embassies, all embassies around the world. The message is going forward that we will not be loyal. They were not told about the evacuation. They were not put on those choppers with our American staff. And they will force many of them to find their own way through the Taliban checkpoints and then get turned away at the airport. And some even got turned away once they were inside.
Bravo, Andrea Mitchell. She continues to speak. I'll play the rest of it after this. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt on Thursday morning. The New York Post landing page headline right now: a death metal concert with one exit and it's on fire. A rescuer on what Kabul airport is like now. I want to go back to the tape of the State Department presser yesterday with Andrea Mitchell's second volley at Secretary of State Blinken, cut number four.
So, you know, what is the message to people working for the U.S. government? Veterans groups are angry about the SIVs. And then there are all the millions of Afghan women who have told their daughters and been raised under this promise of a future, which the Taliban are already, according to Ambassador Vivier today, are denying. There are horrifying examples from provinces and from inside Kabul of people being targeted door to door, people in safe houses being sought out. And all this promise of you will be safe, the Taliban spokesman said, you know, stay in your homes because we haven't told all of our people how to treat women, how to respect women. They also say you can go to school, you can work as long as you comply with Sharia law, which under their interpretation is the most extreme example of the Islamic code that is seen anywhere in the world.
Matt Lee, another State Department spokesperson, AP reporter, I believe, asked this of Secretary Blinken, cut number seven.
You know, since this whole thing began, there's been a lot of criticism of the administration over how it handled it. And there's been a lot of pushback from people within the administration about the hand that you were basically dealt, or what you say you were dealt by the previous administration in terms of the deal with the Taliban, in terms of the SIV program, in terms of the broader refugee program. But you guys have been in office for almost 8 months. It's been 5 months since the president's decision was made. Is there anything about the shortcomings that have been so readily identified by all sorts of people that you guys are actually willing to take responsibility for yourselves?
Representative Chrissy Houlihan, Democrat from Pennsylvania, had this to say yesterday, cut number 17.
But I do think that it is worrisome, as we talked about just now, that we probably won't be able to accomplish the mission of leaving no one behind with the timelines that we have. And so I think that the atmosphere and the mood within the meeting was bipartisanly one of encouraging the president to reconsider that date.
Representative Jason Crow, Democrat of Colorado, said this, cut number 18.
Yeah, I'm not seeing a scenario after all the briefings, the information I've reviewed, both as a member of the Intelligence Committee and the Armed Services Committee, as well as the congressional-wide briefings that we've received in the last 24 hours. I'm not seeing a path for us to get out our Afghan partners between now and the end of the month. The numbers just don't add up. The security situation is deteriorating. It is getting worse. The risk of attack by ISIS and other affiliated groups, as well as other terrorist organizations, is increasing by the day. That's why I said we should put resources and combat troops in that we need to make sure that we can secure against the attack, that we can push the perimeter out beyond the airport, and we can continue to expedite the evacuation operation. We have a moral obligation to these Afghan partners. They protected me. They protected hundreds and thousands of men and women across this country who served in Afghanistan. we have an obligation to them and their families now to bring them to safety, and we have to do what's necessary to accomplish that.
Then these are Democrats, but here's Fatima, an American worker stranded in Afghanistan, appealing to the president, cut 21.
They're stranded at home. We can't get to the airport. When we try to get to the airport, we either get beaten up or we're afraid for our lives. For 4 days, three or four days, we didn't hear anything from anywhere. And then they're saying to go to the airport, but we're not being given clear guidance. They're saying one thing, and then the next thing they come and say something else. So you really exactly don't know what to do. There's a lot of miscommunication going on. You know, your emails are getting ignored. Or, I mean, imagine being stranded in a situation like this and not receiving anything for three, 4 days from the U.S. Embassy or the State Department.
I hope it's only 150 Americans, like CNN reports. I want to know the green card holders. I want to know about the school kids who are on trips back to see their family in California schools. There are lots of stories everywhere. I don't want to get too specific about them. I want to know about Americans in Herat and Kandahar. I want to know about green card holders and RSIV holders. It's a fiasco. They should stay and prepare to stay. I'll be right back on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. Dr. Michael Oren joins me from Israel. Dr. Oren, you know this stuff. Should the United States maintain its troop presence until all American citizens, green card holders, and SIV and permittees are out?
Yeah, of course. Listen, I'm looking at this from the distance of Israel. We here cannot understand why is it when the Taliban flagrantly violated every principle, every article of the agreement, why the United States has to maintain its deadline of August 31st?
I agree. And President Biden says it's because President Trump agreed to a May 1 deadline. But the Taliban violated that with an attack on forward operating base Chapman in March. We're not obliged to go along with this agreement. They committed themselves to a negotiated resolution.
From our perspective, we don't understand why the United States is not blowing up the military equipment that's left behind. It's going to fall in the hands of the Taliban. Now, why the United States is not creating a corridor, safe corridor to the airport with several thousand troops and special forces. A lot of things are striking us as rather, how should I say, anomalous.
Amateurish, confused, a debacle. Let me ask you about another thing, Michael. You've done a lot of rescue missions over the years in Israel. The Ethiopian Jews, the Soviet Union back in the days of the Soviet Union. Resettlement is complicated. Who runs resettlement for the Israeli government?
Officially, the Ministry of Absorption, the Interior Ministry. There have been cases, you may remember way long time ago, back in the late 1970s, Menachem Begin admitted several loads of Vietnamese boat people.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Humanitarianization. They're still running the Asian restaurants here.
So my question is it best, you're a small country, but even in a small country, do you just distribute people over an entire country, or do you try and create neighborhoods of community support?
That's where we've made a mistake. In the past, we have created neighborhoods, and the neighborhoods have been seedbeds of crime. And we made the mistake. I dealt with this extensively in government when we dealt with refugees from Africa. And we put them in certain neighborhoods in Tel Aviv that in any case were disadvantaged and crime-ridden. And we only increased the burden on these people and created a movement against the Africans, which then complicated our foreign relations because it made it seem like it was a racial issue. You have to disperse them over wide areas and not let them. That's also the way that they are forced to assimilate. But together in the same neighborhood, they're never going to learn English, never going to learn American ways. Much more difficult for them. You're not doing them a favor.
How do you teach Hebrew? I was reading last night, I'm reading a history of the Catholic Church, that St. Jerome became a great scholar by forcing himself to learn Hebrew at the age of 45. I'm curious, how do you get anybody to learn Hebrew? English isn't easy, but Hebrew, that's really not easy.
No, Hebrew is easier than English. Has a smaller vocabulary, but we have
really?
A called the Old Times. Yes, it has a very listen. For 2,000 years, it wasn't a developed language. English has about 20,000 used words in daily speech. Hebrew has between 3,000 and 4,000. So if you read a newspaper, you pretty much have your vocabulary. So and there are three major tenses as opposed to American English, much, much more difficult. But having said that, we have a system of what's known as the Ulpanim, which are intense language courses. And most people who move here go through an Ulpan. Some are better than most, but the fact of the matter is it works. We took a language that had been dead for 2,000 years as a spoken language, and we made it into one of the most vibrant languages in the world in terms of the amount of books published, the poetry books published, the films that come out in Hebrew. It's been a total success story.
Okay, very easy question to answer in a minute and a half. How do you make patriots?
You make patriots starting in kindergarten and before. I don't think it's difficult to make patriots at a later age. You're brought up to love your country, and you're brought up by parents who love their country. And certainly that's how I became a patriot. And you recognize that no country is perfect, like no human being is perfect. We all have faults. We've all done bad things. But at the end of the day, we stand for the good in the world. And the good far outweighs the bad. That's what true patriotism is. And,
how do you deal with someone like Begin, who's a hero of mine, but who also had a very violent past because he was involved in the liberation of Israel? What do you deal with? Do you teach it all?
You teach it all. Certainly you teach it all. You don't hide anything. By the way, I've been involved with public diplomacy most of my professional life, and I have one ironclad rule. Never lie. Never lie. Never cover up. Admit the mistakes. People will respect you more. But at the end of the day, you say, listen, any rational person would know that, you know, that what we did at the end of the day was good and for the good. And,
were there any Jews in Afghanistan at all, Michael?
Pardon me?
Are there any Jews in Afghanistan at all?
There's one left.
Is he getting out or is she getting out?
There are a great number of Afghani Jews, including Afghani Jews who are people of Afghani heritage, who are prominent in Israeli society. They've done very well here. But there's one left in Kabul.
And is that Jew getting out?
No, he says he's not.
Well, God bless him. Michael Oren, always a pleasure. Follow him at Dr. Michael Oren on Twitter. Follow me to Hour Number 2, America. I'll keep you posted. There is a terrorist threat at the airport in Kabul. It's been elevated to the highest level. The UK and the US are both warning their citizens to go nowhere near the airport. CNN reporting at least 150 Americans left. That seems like a very low number to me, but I hope they had a very successful withdrawal overnight. But I'm not sure it includes green cards. It's got no correlation to anything we've been told, and therefore people's suspicions are very high. But just pray that it's right and that we find those 150 and get them out and that we get everybody out. They have to extend the deadline, in my opinion. Don't go anywhere, America. It's the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined by former United States Senator Jim Talent of the Bipartisan Policy Center. Good morning, Senator. How are you?
Well, I'm pretty well. Thank you, Hugh. I'm worried about the country, but fine personally.
Let me ask you about whether or not the president should extend the deadline at Kabul Airport. Surge troops there to keep them secure. There is an imminent threat of a terrorist attack. I believe them. But I don't believe we can leave up to 250,000 Afghans behind. What do you think?
Well, yes, because that's not something we negotiated with the Taliban. That was his self-imposed deadline. And I think if he'd taken the position from the beginning that we were going to be there as long as necessary to get Americans out, I think they would have permitted that. Not having done it, that then creates the risk of exactly what you're talking about. But yeah, we should have done that, and should have done it at the beginning.
Now, you've watched a lot of foreign policy crises, as have I. I actually believe this is doing more damage to America than 9/11, though the loss of life of 3,000 Americans was terrible and the trauma long lasting, and we went into two wars because of it. This is an injury to our national character. And I'm curious what sort of damage you think it is doing to us.
I agree with that. I think it's going to demoralize Americans. It already is doing that. But there is no question, it's a disaster for American security abroad. And it's already starting. I mean, the Chinese are mocking us everywhere, sending the message to the Taiwanese, you can't trust us. The opposition party in Taiwan, the KMT, has already said that President Tsai has made a mistake by trusting the Americans too much. They didn't put in exactly those words. China's sending that message to the ASEAN countries. You know, the Brits think and have said we're imbeciles. The Germans are very angry. And the irony is that the administration has properly, to this point, been emphasizing the importance of allies and partners.
Here's the real irony. Senator Talent, I will argue to my dying day that there is no way this would have happened if President Trump was reelected. And he was supposed to be the enemy of NATO and tough on allies. In fact, Joe Biden has shattered NATO. They feel betrayed. And I believe he would have hammered them had they violated the Doha agreement like they did.
Yeah, I don't see Donald Trump withdrawing from Afghanistan if it was clear we were running out with our tails between our legs. I mean,
No way.
Is that your view of Donald Trump? I mean, look, his policy, and I argued this in a column before the election, that he was the best foreign policy president since Reagan. I thought it was brilliant in the Middle East, and I thought it was outstanding in China. His Afghan policy was not the strongest area. But the irony, you, is that we didn't need, you know, a 10 on a scale of 1 to 10 in Afghanistan. We just needed to avoid doing really dumb things. And that's what's happened here. And, the repercussions are beginning. They're going to be with us for a while. And it's going to take actions, not words, to reverse this.
They're attempting to tell us there's an imminent threat, which I believe, but they're using that as an excuse to leave. Am I right that there's been an imminent threat of a terror attack for every American serving everywhere in Afghanistan for 20 years?
Well, sure. I mean, that's the reason we had to put such effort into force protection and got so good at it. Yeah, I mean, look, they are struggling for some way of dealing with this in the short term from a political point of view. I mean, anybody who's been in politics can watch what they're doing. They're trying to get this over with and then hopeful that people will forget it from a political standpoint. But we have to deal with the realities of this in foreign policy. Did you see that Iran and China, that Xi Jinping and Ibrahim Raisi had a really good phone call and agreed that they're going to work together on regional security after...
I did not.
Taliban. Yeah. And Raisi said, yeah, we're going to work with the Chinese on stability in Afghanistan. So we're going to see Chinese are already talking to the Taliban. And I think the obvious deal is you let us come in and extract the mineral wealth, protect Chinese nationals, leave Xinjiang province alone, and we will cover for you internationally, give you money, you know, pay off your leaders, and provide technology so you can oppress your own people. So I think the risk is high that Afghanistan is going to become a node of Chinese influence in South Asia. How do you think India feels about that?
Oh, you know what's going to happen? They're going to have the Belt and Road from China through Afghanistan to Iran, through Syria to Lebanon to threaten Israel.
Yeah, well, and the Chinese will move carefully because they have to see how the Taliban is going to play it. They have time, and all the time they're doing that, they're going to contrast that and their system. They're already doing it. I mean, one of their messages is that the democratic governments of the West are on the way out. They're in decline. This is a key part of their global messaging, and we have reinforced it with this.
Sadly, you are right again, Senator Talent. Follow him on Twitter at Jim Talent. He is with the Bipartisan Policy Center. Thank you, Senator. I want to close the hour by reminding people of the disaster in Haiti to our south. Thousands, tens of thousands of people without homes. Food and water is short, scarce. Food for the Poor is delivering help. Go to HughHewitt.com. They are sponsoring a campaign on the show, at my website, on all of Salem's sites. See the banner, Help Haiti, or call 855-359-4673. 855-359-4673. Fetching Mrs. Hewitt and I are helping. You please help. $10 or $10,000. Please be generous. They really, really need it. It's just rice and water and sausage and beans. But they really, really need it in Haiti. Thank you. I'll be right back. Hour number three of the Hugh Hewitt Show. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home, or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-888-1172. Thank you.
Glory America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thank you. I'm live inside the Beltway on this Thursday morning, August the 26th, 2021. It's a grim morning. There are warnings of imminent terror attacks at the Kabul airport. Of course, we know that, and our Marines and soldiers are in our prayers, CIA, diplomats, the Afghan refugees, the Americans who are trying to get to the airport. The president should keep everybody there and keep the airport open. I have a new Washington Post column that just posted at the Washington Post, the headline of which, an indelible stain on Biden. It reads, "The United States is rushing towards its greatest foreign policy crisis since 9/11, and perhaps one with more damaging impacts on the national character. On that terrible day 20 years ago, Americans ranging from New York's finest to the passengers on United Flight 93 ran toward the danger, not away from it. 20 years ago, the country rallied together to save, then to grieve and comfort, and then to avenge and deter. Now it appears we may abandon hundreds, if not thousands, of Americans and our allies to the same group of Islamist extremists that had sheltered those who launched the attack in 2001. What a terrible blow that would be to the national soul." That's over at WashingtonPost.com. Google it. I'm joined now by Congressman Daniel Crenshaw. Congressman, welcome. Good to have you.
Hugh, always good to be with you.
I call this an indelible stain on President Biden. Do you agree?
It is. That might be, might even be an understatement. It's, he's really put a stain on our country. He's put a stain on our legacy and our dignity. And, it was so unnecessary. He was told not to. I think he got all the right advice from, at least I understand that from the Department of Defense. I'm not sure what his closest advisors gave him, but it's an absolute stain. It's. I'm not sure we recover from this, and he doesn't appear to want to take actions to fix it either.
It will require a Reagan, but in the meantime, we could limit the damage by keeping the airport open. There are threats of terrorist attack. I believe that they're imminent. The UK and the US have said so. Do you think our men and women have the ability to repel those attacks, and therefore should stay at the airport and keep it open?
We have to. I mean, we've been repelling attacks for years. This is what we do. This isn't new to us to have some kind of imminent attack threat on a base that we're on. This has happened a variety of times. You know, we obviously have the intel to know that there's potential for it, which means we still have some kind of asset. And, you know, we could go on offense on this, too. We could stop it before it happens. I mean, again, I don't know the details of exactly how this operation is unfolding, but these are things we've been doing for years. So it's a matter of will. I mean, every restriction we have in this situation is completely self-imposed. You know, and Biden is pretending like well, you know what, we're just in a bad situation, and we're going to make the best of it. You know, I mean, I remember Jen Psaki said, well, the Taliban have most of the country. I mean, we have to coordinate with them. We have to deal with them. You know, first of all, you gave that to them. You know, second of all, I get word there's about 6,000 Taliban in Kabul. They're no match for us if we want to take that step, right? If we want to say, look, we're going to stay as long as it takes. We're going to do whatever we need to do. And your guys are just going to have to deal with that. We are the United States. You are no match for us. And Biden pretends as if we're dealing with a peer competitor here, and this is just not true.
We are acting like a pitiful, helpless giant. Let me ask you, Congressman Crenshaw, I do not recall if you were wounded in Afghanistan or Iraq. I know you served in both places. Did you serve with any Afghans when you deployed with your SEAL teams in both countries or in Afghanistan?
Yeah, I mean, I was wounded in Afghanistan, and actually the guy I was hit by an IED, and then one of our Afghan interpreters who stepped on an IED, and I just happened to be right next to him, and he didn't make it. So, you know, this gets to maybe another point, which is how important it is to get the people who served with us out of Afghanistan. And again, this is something that the administration, you know, gives lip service to, but is not really taking any action to get Afghans out who deserve to be out.
One of the points I make in the Washington Post column is everything that was going to happen to those people is imminently foreseeable. We know what's going to happen to them. Is there any doubt in your mind that the Taliban will execute anyone who worked with the American military?
They're already doing it. They're already doing it. We've been saying this for months. You know, there's been some, in Congress at least, bipartisan efforts to speed up the SIV process. And again, the administration sort of lazily took that advice. Okay, sure, it was clearly not a priority. And you know, we've been saying this for a while. I don't even know what else to say about it. There's no doubt that these killing squads are going to be going house to house looking for people who worked with us. It's already been happening. We've seen videos of it.
So, Congressman, I've seen your special operator colleague, Michael Waltz, for whom my son works, on TV talking about what we are leaving behind in terms of weaponry. How much more lethal will the Taliban / Al-Qaeda be in the second iteration of their control of the passport process and their recognition by foreign governments?
Well, I think that's an open question. I think a lot of this weaponry and the Taliban are not capable of using it. Or at least maintaining it, even in the medium term. But I think what's possible is that they'll sell it to Iran.
Exactly.
And it's just, I'm not sure how much more deadly that makes Iran, but it is an embarrassment. What it is just a pathetic response from the United States. And what frustrates me to no end is I see no indication that we want to do anything about it. You know, again, there's actions we can take on all of these fronts. It doesn't appear we want to do anything about it at all. It's deeply frustrating.
You know, I don't want to be partisan. I want to go back to the beginning here. The Haqqani Network has operated from the time of the invasion to the present, and the head of the Haqqani Network is in Kabul at a mosque. How did the Haqqani Network survive 20 years and four American presidents and all of our combined efforts to eradicate them?
Well, I mean, I guess that's a long question or a long answer to give. But, I mean, how did any of these people survive 20 years? And not, you know, it's not just the Haqqani Network. Has Al-Qaeda do it? And the answer is because you're constantly playing whack-a-mole. You're fighting an ideology, right? You're not fighting this conventional force with a traditional structure that will sign a peace treaty and effectively give up. I mean, when you're fighting an insurgency, it's really you're fighting this sort of ideology that doesn't really die. And the other reality is that because America has never really been fully committed to eradicating these threats, because this debate about whether we should stay or whether we should leave has been happening for, you know, since the day we got there. And Americans become very, very impatient with issues like this. And so we've always sort of been fighting with one hand behind our back. And it's unfortunately just sort of the way America does warfare. Without fully committing. So that might explain some of it as well.
Okay, my very last question. What is the minimum amount of time you think we need to keep the base open at Kabul Airport or at a different place to extricate as many as possible? I don't want to put an impossible deadline. We are getting out. But what is the minimum amount of time we ought to communicate now? Because what we ought not to do is to keep giving deadlines that roll out.
Right. I mean, I would say we're just going to stay until we have a sense that everybody who wants and needs to get out is getting out. You know, that's what I would say. I wouldn't put a deadline on it, and I would say too bad to the Taliban. And I'm not sure how long that would take because, look, the reality is people are not getting through. At this point, it's just simply too dangerous to get to the airport. For a variety of reasons, from this ISIS threats to Taliban checkpoints, Taliban hunting people. There's lots of other considerations that the White House just refuses to acknowledge. I think you have to make that indefinite. Was that we're going to stay as long as it takes to get our people out. Not only that, we retake other air bases that are allowing people to get to places besides Kabul.
Congressman Dan Crenshaw, thank you for your time this morning. Please keep coming back. Stay tuned, America. I'll be right back on the You Do It Show. Brought to you by ReliefFactor.com. $19.95 gets you started on ReliefFactor.com. I talk about it three times in my daily show. At the bottom of the first hour when I take it, and then in hours two and three when I remind you to take it, depending on when your commute begins, because ReliefFactor.com works. It's the only supplement I've taken in 30 years of broadcasting. I've declined every other opportunity to take a supplement, and I'll tell you why. Because ReliefFactor.com actually works. I carry in Curcumin Resveratrol Omega, temporary relief for the relief of minor aches and pains, temporary support for the relief of minor aches and pains, and you can't do better than that three-week starter pack, $19.95.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.